up? This is Movies On Up discussion episode. Shame. Men play the game. Women know the score. I am Dave. The women to my men is also with me, Ryan.
You just mean that between the two of us, I'm the more attractive one, right?
I don't know what that means. I never know what that means, but the sex to my addict, that sounds even worse.
Because I'm the sexy one.
Anyways, we are Ryan and Dave. We are Movies On Up. This week we are talking about Steve McQueen's Shame from last year. The tagline, men play the game, women know the score. If you know what movie that is from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, Twitter @moviesonup, facebook.com/moviesonup, or moviesonup.com. Let us know what movie that's from, and if we pick you, you win the addictive Movies On Up prize package.
Which is full of pornography.
And nothing to be ashamed of. Before we get to a bonus list, Ryan, why don't we just set up Shame a little bit? It's directed by Steve McQueen, starring Mikey Fassbender, Carey Mulligan, James Badgedale. Give us some numbers on that.
Domestically, it made $3.9 million. Foreign made much more than that, 13.7 for a total of 17.6. It opened on just 10 screens and was number 17 that week. It was December 2nd. The top five movies, a little bit different than Shame: Twilight, The Muppets, Hugo, Arthur Christmas, and Happy Feet.
A little bit different.
Yeah. So if you didn't want to see any of those films, there was Shame for you. It ranks number 7 all-time domestic gross in films rated NC-17. I'm not going to make you guess what number 6 and what number 7 are. I'll save that for just a second. Number 6, Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. Number 8, The Dreamers. But all-time domestic gross, it ranks number 5,147. The film directly above it, Dave. You've seen it, and you like it.
Gremlins.
It is The Assassination of Jesse James by the Cowardly Robert Ford. And the film directly below it is a sequel to a movie that I talked about in my bonus watch this probably about 3 weeks ago.
Gremlins 2.
It is Warlock the Armageddon. So that's right where Shame fits in.
So wait, so it released in the U.S. in 2011, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was thinking this was last year, but...
December of 2011.
Yeah, so it was close, but this is one of those when Oscars came out in 11, it was a shame Fassbender didn't get nominated. Everybody expected McQueen to. They didn't. But the only reason we're doing that movie this week, not because there's two Michael Fassbender movies coming out this fall. There's a Steve McQueen movie coming out this fall.
That will probably get nominated. I certainly hope so.
But because there are two sex addiction comedies coming out. Comedies. There's
Don John
starring Joey Gordon-Levitt and
Scarlett Johansson.
Thanks for Sharing.
Tony Danza
starring Mark Ruffalo and Pink.
Yes.
So taking a little different look at sex addiction. This movie, not a comedy. But before we get to this movie, it's time for an extra five, a bonus list. These are the top five movies where the male star bears it all. Number five. Some Jason Segel weighing in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Number 4, how do you feel about some Ewan McGregor meat stick in Trainspotting? Number 3, you like yellow? The Simpsons movie. You see Bart Simpson's little wang. Number 2, one of my favorites.
One of your favorite wangs?
One of my favorite dongs on the planet. Tom Hardy dong in Bronson.
But your favorite dick.
And not my favorite dick, it's my favorite movie. Cillian Murphy dong in 28 Days Later. So those are the top five movies with some
featuring
ween.
Featuring penises.
With some ween in it.
But Shame was not eligible, I assume.
Shame was not eligible. It'd probably be in the 2 or 3 range. But anyway, Shame. Michael Fassbender stars as Brandon, probably.
Yep, that was his name.
And he's a sex addict.
Yes.
It sets it up pretty early. Within the first 4 minutes.
He's inside of two chicks.
He's with two women. By 6 minutes, he's also J&O. He's handy in himself.
Let me just say, usually we try and keep the language clean.
This movie was NC-17.
Yeah, I was going to say.
This one can be R.
You've got to give us a pass on this. I don't have, especially this is our third episode we've recorded this week. I don't have the wherewithal to say.
Dance around potty words.
I'm just going to say he was jerking off.
So
and I'm sorry, but like maybe don't let your kids listen to an episode about Shame.
A sex addict movie. So here we go. Within the first 4 minutes, he's up inside two women. 5 minutes in, you see his dong. 6 minutes in, he's jerking it. That's that they're establishing this dude's a sex addict.
They do it very well. In that first 5 minutes, it does become sort of a pattern. The way, you know, you see him come out of the bedroom, he makes the same walk down the hall, completely nude, hits the messages on his phone, rounds the corner, and you see and you hear the shutters to start that. You hear that sound of the shutters coming up, light comes in. So it is very much a routine. This is, you know, his behavior that he can't really change at this point. So I do think that addict behavior comes across in the first 5 minutes. That's a lot to set up.
It sets up a lot in just that 5 or 6 minutes because he doesn't talk hardly at all.
No.
If at all in that first
really,
6 minutes.
Really, the only dialogue is on the message.
I'm big on moments. I always talk about how movies have certain moments and they have to hit those moments. Steve McQueen in this movie, he's not afraid to make a moment last longer than a typical filmmaker would. Like, he lets stuff sit there. And you see an example of that on the first subway scene. It was still within 10 minutes of the movie, but Brandon's on the train, pretty redhead sitting across from him, so he's just staring at her. It's obvious why he's staring at her. She sees him.
We've seen in the first 4 minutes that he likes the lady.
And she sees him, and she's it sets up that not only does he desire sex, not only does he need that, but he's also very desirable himself. So it's not hard for him to get laid. And he's doing it. His biggest, like, it's working essentially. This girl's kind of, you know, crossing her legs because there's some moisture working. And, like,
I thought she was just trying to show more of her leg, not necessarily.
No, she was squirming because her seat was getting wet. But
he read that in the stage directions.
Mm-hmm. There's no effort there. He's just staring at this woman, and that's what's happening to her. So you set up that, like, oh, he loves women. They also love him. She gets up. She starts to have second thoughts. You can see that in her face. She grabs the thing to get off. You see her ring, so you understand where her hesitation has come. He doesn't care. He's right up with her. Essentially chases her. Goes from
very much so.
Now you see the addict. That's the addict behavior. Is like, clearly she's moved on and realized this isn't a good idea. He still wants to pursue it. So he doesn't care about anything except him.
And I do want to set up that he's running through this subway chasing after this woman very much like desperate. Like, the most important thing to his character at that moment is having sex with this woman. Yes. He's just seen. It'll come back around at the end of the movie, but having seen it a couple times, like, I didn't really catch it so much the first time, but then I was like, oh yeah, let me mention that. Make a note.
Yeah, like, he has to have it. And it goes from that he's putting no effort in, he's just staring at this woman. And then it turns into, like, now he's chasing her. Now the hunt's on. So it went from no effort to just that's
maximum
all he
effort.
Can focus on. So then we see him at work, and it's set up. The relationship with James Badge Dale is there. His computer gets taken away at work. Now we're 11 minutes into the movie. He's in the work bathroom jerking off again.
He can't even, you know.
He can't go a work day because he's in a meeting. He sees him take his computer, goes into his office. Your computer got a virus. We had to take it away. Straight to the bathroom to jerk off. So it's established. 12 minutes in, he's at home trying to jerk off again. Cell phone rings. Home phone rings. Voicemail from his sister. Again.
At this point, we don't even know it's his sister. There's just,
yeah, true.
It's just a woman that is clearly trying to get a hold of him. And at least I thought, the first viewing, that it was just some woman that he did meet up with on a subway. And, you know, she's trying to just stay a part of his life. He's interested in the sex, but not the relationship afterwards. So I thought that that's what it was originally, and that's why he was ignoring her, despite her best efforts, maybe crass as they were. I have cancer.
Yeah.
Of the vulva.
At this point, Michael Fassbender has barely spoken. And that continues throughout the movie. He doesn't really talk.
Man, a few words.
Yeah, it's similar to Ryan Gosling in Drive. But yet,
with more penis.
Yeah. But Fassbender is so compelling that even when he's not talking on screen, like, he's interesting to watch because everything he's doing, there's so much depth there without words. Like, he was that's why it is a shame he didn't get nominated for an Oscar here, because he did a lot while doing a little, essentially.
And I do think that a lot of that credit should go to McQueen as well, and I don't think you're going to disagree with
me. No, I don't disagree at all.
Right. But, I mean, this is kind of a slow-paced movie where, you know, a lot of the scenes do stretch on for longer than you think they should, and that is can slow the pace down. But for the most part, it's still, there's something intriguing, and I don't just mean naked people. Like, there are enough intriguing emotions that you get from, and it's not a big cast, but I mean, I think that even Carey Mulligan, by the time she does show up, I thought she was really good in this
too. She's so good. I mean, Carey Mulligan, it's hard not to take her for granted, because she's never been in something that she wasn't just amazing in, and she is.
Gatsby.
Oh, I haven't seen
Gatsby. Yeah, I know. It's just, it's a shame, because, like, she, in this movie, absolutely perfect for what she was asked to do and what she should have been doing in that movie. I think that Gatsby, and some of the people behind me were just kind of talking about how she wasn't really doing anything except pouting, and I thought, well, yeah, but that's why she was so good in Shame, because that's really all she did.
And that's why I have trouble telling her and Michelle Williams apart, because they look so similar.
And they're both awesome.
And they're both amazing in everything. Like, it's so hard to distinguish them, because it's not like, oh, one, they look alike, but one sucks at everything. They're both amazing in everything, and they're risky. They take chances. They do.
And they both will show their vaginas.
Yeah, they'll both go full bush. But they'll do, I mean, they're just really interesting actresses. But yeah, so we haven't met.
We haven't officially met her.
We've heard her voice. It builds up that relationship with David again, who's essentially Michael Fassbender's boss, played by James Badge Dale, who I liked. I liked it. It was weird because I looked at, like, I was watching World War Z earlier this week, and I saw, oh, James Badge Dale was in this too, $200 million movie. He was in Iron Man 3, $400 million movie. He was also in Lone Ranger. So, busy summer for James Badge Dale, but he's got a bigger role in this than any of those, as the friend who you get a feeling wishes he could be Brandon.
And I think he's trying to be.
He's trying so hard to be Brandon.
That I find so incredible about this movie is you have a guy in Brandon that is a sex addict, and you have a dude that is essentially displaying many of the same behaviors, and that guy's married. He's got a family.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's Brandon that is the pig, because he's doing this as a single guy, when everything that Brandon does in the movie, not everything, I can't sign off on everything, but the things that I think James Badge Dale's character does, I find more despicable. I do.
Way more despicable. He tries so hard to do it. Like, the scene with the women at the club, he's trying so hard to hit on them. And he takes the blonde out, makes her dance. Fassbender does nothing the whole time. She can't take her eyes off him. He played their little game, and he nailed it. And she can't take their eyes off him. So
they're blue and brown eyes, respectively.
Yeah, other way around, brown and blue, yeah, respectively.
Elizabeth had brown eyes.
Yeah, so but it's so effortless that they leave. James Badge Dale can't close the deal. He gets him on a taxi. He leaves. Next thing you know, the blonde that James Badge Dale was trying to hook up with pulls up next to him. Hey, you want a ride? Next thing you know, he's nailing her in some industrial park.
I don't know if it was where it was, but I thought it might have been an underpass. But the thing that I did think was hilarious was that as he's railing her, spray painted right above her is the word fuck.
Yeah, did like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I understand what they're doing.
Yeah, it was, I liked that. So then he goes home, music playing in his apartment, gets out the baseball bat, hears noise in the bathroom, goes in there, naked Carey Mulligan taking a bath.
Yep.
So now we meet Carey Mulligan.
How do you do?
Yeah, so she's naked.
And this is another scene that I think goes on a long time. She's standing there naked for a long time. And I've read some things where people were pointing to this scene and saying, did she really need to be, like, full frontal naked for that long? And I understand. But I think that what it does is it is so uncomfortable. I have a sister. In no way, shape, or form would I stand there with her being naked for any amount of time, let alone that long. But I think it kind of plants the seed that there's some kind of weird relationship that these two have.
That, or it just plants the seed that he's so desensitized to a naked body,
But it didn't bother her either.
Well, I'm going to get to that too, because she also has an addiction kind of her own that we'll get to. But so it sets up that that's, you know, they talk. She stays the night. He overhears her on the phone. Clearly she just got dumped and is desperate, like begging for that affection and that please take me back. Like, it's sad. It's high school girl stuff. Like, it's, she needs it so bad. She's desperate. She's chasing a woman in the subway type desperate to have this relationship back. But, you know, it's tries to get set up that she's doing better. Like, she's working now. She's singing. She makes money.
More responsible, more able to take care of herself than I guess she had been in the past.
Yeah, so it's okay. You could stay here, but you leave when I leave for work. Because there's the relationship there, you could tell it's somewhat strained and he doesn't fully trust her. Then there's such a little part that makes more sense later. They're at the subway station and she kind of just leans into the train rail. Like, not just kind of leans a little bit, and he grabs her and just says, stop messing around, or something like that. At the time, it seems like innocuous. It doesn't seem like anything, but then they go on. This is the first time we see that David's married. Like, they're at work. David, you know, mentions his wife.
He mentions his wife at the club. He talks about the success, and okay, I hope my wife appreciates it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even when he's hitting on those three chicks at the bar, like, this whole time, you know, we know that he is married and he's a pig, but this time, you know, the ring is really front and center.
Yeah, so he talks about it, and he wants to go out again. And, of course, he wants to go out with Brandon. Like, it's very subtle, but you almost feel like he is one of those guys who has confidence when Brandon's around. It almost feels like it's not set up, but just that's how I felt it, is that when Brandon's next to him, this dude feels like he can hit on any girl, because when Brandon's next to him, girls are interested.
Yeah, I think
it almost felt like that.
There's probably some of that, like, remora with the shark aspect to it. But I also think that, you know, inversely, it's a terrible relationship, you know, for Brandon. You've got a guy that is a sex addict, and his, you know, I guess his best friend or whatever is sort of an enabler of that behavior.
An encourager.
Yeah, exactly. So it's...
but an encourager of it, but I feel like Brandon's kept it under wraps. Like, I don't think...
Oh, yeah, he could control it.
They don't know...
I mean...
I don't think James Badge
Dale... Keep it on the DL.
Yeah, James Badge Dale doesn't know he's going to the bathroom at work to jerk off. I doubt he knows he was inside two women within the first 4 minutes of this movie. Like, I feel like he feels like Brandon has the potential to do that, but isn't doing it. And since he's able, he's trying to live vicariously through him. So there is that kind of hero worship there, but he wants to go out. So Brandon says, my sister sings, she's singing tonight. So they go.
It seems like a terrible idea on
Brandon's
part.
Terrible idea, because Carrie Mulligan's pretty woman, pretty girl, vulnerable. James Badge Dale likes pretty girls, needs them to be vulnerable so he can attack, and he does. They end up going back to Brandon's place, to where his friend David can hook up with a sister all night, and you hear it. He has to hear it.
And he doesn't really handle that very well for someone that is addicted to this behavior. And I guess on the one hand, it is sort of moderately, at the very least, moderately disrespectful, you know, to women, to kind of just use them for sex. When that activity is going on, he takes it for more than, I guess, what it is. It really affects him on a personal level, whereas when he's participating in it, it doesn't seem to.
Yeah, so he leaves the apartment. He goes for a run, and it didn't really work out, everything, because when he comes back, David's gone. She tries to sneak into his room to cuddle. She just feels really needy at this point. Like, she needs affection. As much as David needs a nut, like, she needs just attention and affection and to just feel adored.
And that's how she was going to get it.
Yeah, and he tells her to get out a few times, and then he yells at her to get out. So it ends poorly. He just screams, and she goes running. And then it, you know, we're back at work. Now it's been established David's married. Now you see he has kids. He's video chatting with his young child at work when Brandon goes in to see him, and that's when they talk about the hard drive. And this is where you kind of get the sense that, oh, David knows nothing about him, because he tells him, like, oh, your hard drive had some sick stuff on it. Lists all these types of porn. I don't even know what that is. Like, he says,
must be an intern, right?
Yeah, and then he blames it on
clearly it couldn't be you, because I know you and you're not into cream pies.
So Brandon just kind of like, and then he's kind of sick guy would do that on company time. Brandon's just hiding it, so.
We find out, because he then, I believe, just goes in J-Zo again.
Not yet.
Not
I didn't
yet?
Mark it down.
Oh,
no.
You did make all the notes on.
I did. I have stats later. Where that leads to is that you start to see Brandon kind of start to change, because he's always used women. They're holes to him. That's all they are. He just saw his sister used like that. So it's almost like he wants to do something different. And the first step towards change is there was a secretary in the office he was fantasizing about earlier. So he talks to her, and it's not just a meeting. He actually takes her to dinner. They actually go on an actual date. And it's kind of awkward. It gives you
very
that
awkward
first date awkwardness. But he's so damn charming that he pulls it off.
In parts, I think during the dinner, he absolutely bombs. And I was thinking, for a guy that pulls the amount of tail that he does, he has no idea how to do it. Maybe no idea when he's actually trying.
Yeah,
I guess
that's what I mean, is it's been set up so far that there's no effort to, because he was even with a prostitute earlier, too. So it was almost like, if he can't get a girl just by staring at her, then he'll just go pay for it. This one, he's actually trying for it. And there is that spark that he's being honest. He's not hiding anything. She asks questions that could be layups if he would lie and tell her what she wants to hear, but he doesn't. He's honest with it. And it's it feels like watching a first date, because it was awkward. And it's like watching a first date that you don't know if these two were meant for each other or not. Because
guessing they're probably not.
The ending is awkward. Like, you can tell there's a spark there, but you don't know if there's a connection, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, those are her words. I mean, she talks about connection. Clearly, she thinks he's hot, but I think she kind of thinks he's a bit of a tool, and not sure if she really is as into him as she feels like she ought to be.
But yet he's trying, and I think he's trying more than she expected. Then it goes to he's J&O at the house, and she walks in.
Neither of them are great at locking the bathroom door.
No. To her, it's funny.
Yeah.
He comes out in the towel, and it's the conversation's weird.
Yes.
Because he comes out and, like, attacks her, like, grabs her, and she's like, oh, you want to fight? You want to fight? She's still playful. He's saying, like, are you spying on me? That's a weird line. Like, he asks her, are you spying on me? And she's still goofing off playing, but then he straddles her. Again, the awkwardness, his towel kind of starts to come off. He's
naked. Just jerking it.
Straddling his sister on the couch, like, holding her down tight with her arms. And then she realizes, like, oh, he's not playing anymore.
He's not jerking around.
Yeah, anymore. So they're... That turns sour quickly. So,
to say the least.
So, yeah, he's mad about that. She gets up and just leaves. She had just gotten home when she walked in on him. She leaves. In that moment, she also sits down, and there's a webcam girl talking to Brandon, not using nicknames. Like, yeah. Oh, I know what Brandon likes. Are you Brandon's girlfriend? So after she storms out, he's mad. Like, I think this is where he starts seeing, like,
maybe I've got a problem.
Like, he's starting to realize he can't treat girls like that, because it happened to his sister. Now, like, he starts throwing everything away. He goes through his closet, his drawers, garbage bag upon garbage bag, seemingly like 8 garbage bags full of porn, including his laptop that he just throws away.
And I understand all of that. I understand, you know, wanting to get rid of the temptation, you know, of the porn and of the laptop. But why did he have to throw away the food? I didn't get that. He goes into the refrigerator.
He threw away some leftover pasta, which I thought was funny.
I thought it
was such a random shot of all this porn, now food, now porn, laptop.
Yeah, I don't know if I was reading into it, but I was thinking like
it was rigatoni.
Yeah,
which does the openings are kind
of
wide.
I mean, again, maybe I'm trying to read way too much into this, but I was thinking
it was in there for a reason. I don't know what
that wasn't
the reason
an accident.
Was.
I know.
Yeah, I trust McQueen enough that we're probably missing the point, but there had to have been a point, or he just thought it was funny.
Do you think like? You think he fucked that pasta?
He might have. I do like
Jason
rigatoni.
Biggs on it.
I do like.
I like it an awful lot, but like in a plutonic kind of way.
Yeah. So there's all that, and the next day, so he's trying to turn, he just pulls the secretary aside at work and just starts kissing her there, and then leads her out of the office. Takes her. Where are we going? Trust me. Takes her to a hotel.
Fancy
a shag pad, and. A weird shot of him doing one line of coke.
Yeah.
That's never been set up the entire movie that he's into coke. He does one shot. Maybe that's because he's trying to, I don't know. Maybe that's.
He's trying to do things different, and he thinks he needs to do a chunky rail to adjust his behavior.
So we talked about scenes that go on longer than
necessary?
You expect them to. I'm not going to say necessary because I think it played out well.
The thing that I think went on longer than necessary was her singing. We kind of
skipped
over it. Sissy singing.
Over it.
Yeah.
She sang like a whole song.
Yes. And it was just
it
on
was
her
face. It was a
close-up
of her face.
I got it. There was quite a bit of him crying, and I thought that was interesting, too.
That was cute.
He's clearly kind of proud of her on some level. The emotions there were good. You needed to see them, but I think that her singing New York went on entirely
too long. That did go on long. But this scene takes a long time. But again, I think it's one of those moments, like the train scene, where you're seeing his character turn. Like here he's taking this hot secretary to just nail in the middle of the day. This is stuff he knows how to do.
Yes.
But yet he's coming off kind of awkward. Like he doesn't. He's cracking jokes. You've never seen him really crack jokes and that. It's just down to business to him. And you kind of get the feeling that he kind of likes this girl and that this isn't what he wants for her. Like, you get the feeling that he likes her, but she's more than just a slam piece in the middle of the day. And
he doesn't know how to process that. I think it's whenever there's emotion involved in sex, he can't process it.
Yeah, and you get that a lot where he'll just kind of stop and stare for a minute, and then she restarts it, and he just goes into it because that's what's familiar. Then he stops, and it's up to her to keep it going, and then all of a sudden the plumbing isn't working. So he kind of just stops. He can't talk about his feelings. He doesn't know how to process them. He doesn't know what these are. Like, he doesn't understand what these feelings are. But you kind of feel like he likes this girl, and he doesn't want to just nail her in the middle of the day in a hotel.
Which is all he knows how to do.
Yeah, so he just stops. And, you know, she just kind of leaves. And it's not that he can't get it to work, because then all of a sudden he just goes bangs a random chick against a window. So
I feel like that was a hooker.
Like, yeah, it was, because the shot earlier in the movie where he looks up and there's a chick getting nailed against a window.
Right.
So he resorted back to what he knew. So it still worked. He still got what he needed, just in a different way.
Not what he wanted.
Yeah. He's back at the apartment watching 60s cartoons on his 27-inch LCD TV that you would expect he would have something bigger, but
doesn't watch a lot of TV.
No. But so his sister comes in, she's leaving a voicemail for David. And this line I thought was funny is she clearly doesn't know this guy, because there's a line like, oh, you're not answering your phone. I'm assuming you're at your pottery class. This is one of those moments. This is a scene that goes on for a long time, but it's nailed. Like it's Fassbender and Mulligan face to face, literally. That's the shot. Like she's home, clearly upset that David's not answering a call, sits down next to him, can't get a hug. He sits there for a second. You think he's just gonna not, but then he puts his arm around her, and then he just turns on the prick. Like, he's not gonna call you back. You know he's married, right? He has a family. It just gets really mean.
He's passing judgment on her for things that, I mean, he wanted to have sex with a married chick right at the beginning of the movie. I don't know if she had a family. It doesn't really matter.
His morals aren't the top notch.
Right. But maybe that's, he hates that about himself, so he didn't want to see her doing the same thing.
Yeah, but he's just, like, really mean to her. And she, I like that she kind of throws it back in his face. Like, oh, yeah, you have an apartment, you have a job, but who cares? Like, what do you have, really? Like,
you have a 27-inch television.
Yeah, and just a 22-inch dong. But, like, it's such a good scene. And this is one of those that, like, I mean, I think Fassbender's an amazing actor, and I think Mulligan is one of the best actresses out there right now. And them, the shot is literally from behind the couch of them just face-to-face having this argument. And it's so good. Like, you want to see acting. Like, this scene is, if I'm teaching an acting class, I'm showing this scene because it's just so on point. And at no point do I, it just feels so real. Even though I know both of these names, these faces from other stuff, but it just feels so good, and he gets really mean and essentially kicks her out, says, you need to go find somewhere else to go, and I don't have anywhere else to go. Stop being the victim. And he accuses her of making everything dramatic when he's the one that's turning it into an issue where all she wants is her brother. Like, all she wants is to have her brother in her life. And that set up when she's like, if I leave, you won't talk to me. Like, I won't hear from you again. So it's like, yeah, she's there because she got dumped, and she's desperate because she needs that affection. She's addicted to the affection like he's addicted to the sex. And she's also trying to change. She's responsible now. She's making money. She's singing. So maybe if she can get that affection in a loving way, like from a family, maybe she won't be as desperate. So it's almost like she's trying to transition too, but her crutch that she's trying to use for isn't helping at all. In fact, he's making it worse. And
clearly there's something, at the very least, strained in this relationship. And I don't know if I'm reading too much into it. So, I mean, they don't really spell it out for you. It's one of those things where, you know, maybe you just take it for what it is or what you think it might be. But clearly he's got some emotional issues, you know, when it comes to sex. And I started thinking about, like, the most emotional he gets in the movie is when he's yelling at Sissy. So I kind of thought, and at some point later in the movie, she makes a comment, again, leaving a voicemail about how they're not bad people. They just came from, I think she said, like, a fucked up situation or something. So I got to thinking about, you know, maybe there was some sort of sexual abuse when they were younger, and maybe it involved the two of them. So, you know, he's got, you know, that love that he feels for his sister because she's his sister, but because maybe there was some sort of sexual contact between the two of them in the past, that those two emotions are kind of mixed up in his head. And anytime he feels, like with the secretary, he feels that love emotion, it feels kind of weird and wrong because he feels the same thing about his sister and he can't really separate the two. And I think that's maybe why he gets so mad at her and can't have her around. It's because it's difficult for him. He can't have her around because he knows, I think he feels like he just wants to have sex with her, but he knows that's wrong. But being an addict, he almost can't help himself.
Kind of. Yeah, that's why they're so comfortable with each other's nudity.
Sure.
Because they are both screwed up, and I think they're both desensitized to what they're addicted to. So that scene, they nailed it. That scene is just so strong and powerful. He essentially kicks her out, and then now he doesn't know where he's at. So he's at a bar.
Not in a good place.
No, he's at a bar. Girl comes up. He starts hitting on her. She's with her boyfriend.
Doesn't care.
Does he go down on you? Because that's what I want to do. And he's very upfront. Slides his finger
super
up her skirt.
Super upfront in the front door.
Fingers her in at the bar, not in the back.
Not in the bathroom, not in the classy way, like in the bathroom.
Yeah, fingers her at the bar. She doesn't resist. Licks his finger. Just keeps going on about what he wants to do to her. And then the boyfriend comes over. And she tries to cover for it, like, oh, he's blah, 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 just joking. And Brandon, at this point, he just, it's like he needs to feel something. He knows what's going to happen. He's just got to ensure it happens. So he's a smart ass to this guy, puts his finger up to the guy's nose, and then gets his ass beat outside.
Which I can't really say that I blame the guy.
No. So it's like he just needs to feel something. And
he felt boots into his ribcage.
Yeah. So he goes to the club that he usually goes to.
But again, he wants to feel something, but he also wants to get laid.
Yes.
I mean, that does become...
It's only when he realizes he's not going to be able to lay this chick that he has to have something.
Yeah, so he goes, okay, what's plan B?
Yeah, and then he goes to the club that he usually goes to, but he's all beat up and not...
Looks like he's a druggie.
Yeah, so he's told, no, not tonight, buddy. There's a guy smoking across the street. There's some eye contact.
There's some subway eye contact.
So he follows them into what is apparently a gay sex club. No words are spoken. He just walks through the halls, goes into a
gets
room.
Gets
pulled into a room, makes out with a dude, and just shoves his head down. So he gets blown by a dude at the sex club. Like, that's how bad he needs it. When this movie came out, some people called it homophobic because they felt like that was his rock bottom moment. Like, they were trying to set up that they were trying to claim
he'll
it was,
do anything, even get blown by a dude.
Which I don't look at that as homophobic because he was clearly straight. I'm straight, so if I'm getting a blowjob from a guy willingly, like something's gone wrong, doesn't make me homophobic. Just like if a gay guy is going down on a woman, probably something went wrong. Doesn't mean he hates straight people. So I never saw it as homophobic because it also isn't treated as rock bottom. I think the next scene, another scene that goes on way too long, it's weird to say this, but it's almost like his rock bottom scene is when he's railing two chicks graphically.
I kind of think that this whole interlude here, his whole journey this night is sort of like the collective rock bottom, because he just keeps, he can't just quit while you're ahead. You know what I mean? Like, not that you're ahead after getting your ass kicked at a bar, not that you're ahead after getting ahead from a dude, a completely random dude,
yeah,
in a sex club, and then, you know, going
to a whorehouse.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, I treat that whole thing as kind of like, this is as bad as it gets, because not only, you know, did he just need a release, which he got at the sex club, but he had to keep going. Maybe it was because he didn't want that to be the last one, or he wasn't done yet. But clearly at this point, he is out of control. He had been, you know, relatively in control throughout most of the movie with his addiction, but now not so much.
Yeah, and you see it through it. Like, I mean, this scene is graphic. He rims the one, like... It goes on for a long time, but you see a lot go on in Brandon's face this whole time. Like, you almost see him realizing, like, he's hit rock bottom.
He's disgusted with himself.
He hates what he's doing. Like, he can't keep doing this. Like, yeah, the nailing two chicks is cool, but he's got to stop. Like,
but he doesn't.
He does eventually.
Well, eventually, yes. Eventually it comes to an end, but he does not stop before that.
No, but you can see in his face, like, he knows he should. So he ends with this crazy graphic threesome, and there's a voicemail from his sister. She sounds pretty rough. Sounds pretty bad. He's on the subway waiting for it to stop. It all of a sudden stops. Then all of this, you see police walk by or run by, and then you hear...
There's been an investigation.
There's a police investigation. We have to stop the train here. And then you, at the same time as Brandon, kind of think back to earlier when she was playfully, like, leaning into the... It's like, did his sister jump in front of a train? Like, was him yelling at her the last push for her to jump in front of a train? So he gets out. He's calling her over and over and over again. She's not answering, so he starts running. This is really the first time you see, like, true emotion from him, because he looks concerned. He looks like he cares about something for the first time in the entire movie, that's not desperation. Like, being desperate for something isn't caring about something. So
I think it still is on some level desperation. Like, he's desperate to get back to his sister. He realizes that that is important. And again, you see him running through a subway with that look of utter desperation, but it's coming from a different place. You know, he's not running to try and fulfill this urge. He's running because he's afraid that he's going to lose something. Not, he's desperate to gain something.
Yeah, so he's rushing home afraid that he lost his sister, and he gets home, and there she is in the tub, or not in the tub, in the bathroom with slit wrists. And this is where you really see him, it really dawns on him how important his sister is to him. And he's trying to cover up her cuts. He makes a call. It's really powerful. Like, this is another one of those that it could have been shorter, but because McQueen doesn't care and he wants to, I keep saying that. Like, some of these scenes you would think would be shorter, I don't want to imply that any of them drag on, because
no, the only, I think, like I said, the only
the
thing,
singing
the one yes.
does, but I think the showing Brandon cry in that is. Showing him cry after 30 or 40 seconds of her singing, I don't think establishes his character as much as it taking almost a full song for him to really appreciate what he's singing. I see what he was doing, but yeah, that does. But like, these scenes that we're saying are long, I don't feel like they dragged on. Like this.
And they're not gratuitous either. Like,
the three-way was. I mean, but you still saw a lot of emotion in his face.
You know,
yes.
It wasn't just like, hey, I just want to show a long sex scene.
I just want to see Michael Fassbender eat out an ass. Like, it wasn't just that. It was a lot to it. And that scene, it's just him frantically holding his sister and trying to save her life, essentially, that you could have conveyed in a 25, 30-second scene, but he lets it go, and you really see, again, you see Fassbender act. Like, you see this character, Brandon, it finally hits him what losing this sister would be, because she's right. If she leaves that house, he's not going to call her. He doesn't answer her calls, so if she left that night, he's not going to talk to her again. So it's almost like this is what makes him realize, like, that's my sister.
It's the same thing, because if she dies, he's not going to talk to her again either.
Yeah, but there's always that, I think he needed to know that she's out there.
Or at least feel like this is what it would be like to lose her, maybe?
Yeah, so she's at the hospital, she's pulled through, and he sees other cuts on her arm, which are referenced.
At the David, club scene, yeah.
David references them. And she says something like, jokes around, like,
bored.
I get bored, yeah. So you see that this has been a long time coming, and that there were signs for it that he just didn't take the time to even accept.
Well, I mean, I think maybe he did, because, you know, like, she's clearly got a history of hurting herself. So I think at the subway there, when he says, quit fucking around, he realizes that she has those tendencies. And, you know, he realizes she's upset, might be thinking about that. But instead of saying, hey, you know, are you okay? He just yells at her and says, quit fucking around.
Yeah. So she kind of wakes up and just calls him a shithead and smiles and then just kind of lays there. And he's happy with that. Like, you could see that he's happy that she's still there. Like, she's still alive. And then he runs out into the rain and just breaks down. Like, looks human for almost the first time. Like, it's almost like everything is coming to a head, and it's just, he's just losing it, and he realizes everything he could have lost that he still has, and he's trying to make changes, but it's almost like there's doubt that he doesn't know if he can. And then again, you have to hit moments, and the first train scene was set up so beautifully and so perfect. We revisit that train scene. She doesn't, the same redhead, mm-hmm. doesn't look like she's just going from point A to point B. She's got more makeup on. She's done up more. And she's the one that initiates the
little looky-loo.
Yeah, the looky-loo. And she gets up and you see the ring just like earlier, but she doesn't have that look of doubt.
No reservation.
No, she's just still looking at him like begging him, follow me like you did before. And he's looking at her. And then cut to credits. So I like that you don't know if he changed or not. There's
because you could really see it going either way.
It could go either way, and I like that. And that was the end of the movie. I mean, it was a slower movie, but I don't ever feel like it dragged.
No. The only time I think it drags is just that one scene. And it's a slow song to begin with. Like,
she really slows it up.
Yeah. I do think that the pacing was pretty good. I think all those...
For a movie with drawn-out scenes and minimal dialogue, it was paced beautifully, almost.
The scenes they spent a lot of time on were very important to the movie and important to the... If he ends up not having sex with that redhead, then it was, you know, to his growth. If he does have sex with her, then, you know, it's important to the arc, which maybe is more of a circle than an arc.
And I like that we don't know. It's up to you. She was hot. I would assume he did. But who knows?
Maybe after, you know, just seeing his sister in the hospital, maybe he has turned over a new leaf. And you'd like to believe that as a human being, you can do that.
Yes. I mean, I love the movie. I think it's a shame Fassbender wasn't. I think it's a disaster that Fassbender wasn't nominated. And even McQueen, I mean, give him a screenplay, something. This movie was, especially screenplay one, there was such little dialogue, but so much. Fassbender's character went through so...
Give him screenplay? How about cinematography, maybe? If
anything. The way this... I mean, it was...
Cinematography on an NC-17 movie with some very graphic sex scenes.
Like, he deserved Best Director. Like, this is one of the best directing jobs of that year because it was a beautifully directed film, and the screenplay helped with that he co-wrote.
If this movie's rated R, it's going to get... It would have gotten much more attention than it was. The NC-17... is poison, much more now than it even was before. I mean, there's only ever been one Oscar winner that was, you know, NC-17, and it's very rare that anything will even get nominated. I mean, I can remember Malcolm McDowell being nominated for Clockwork Orange, but it was really just Midnight Cowboy, and at that point it was X. But those two movies, you know, to get an X rating back then, when that one, you didn't need to do nearly as much as you do now.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of poison. But if this movie would have won an Oscar, would you have liked it anymore?
No, but I mean, I think it's a shame that Fassbender wasn't nominated, especially. I think that's the bit, or even Mulligan. Like, I think Fassbender, Mulligan, and McQueen all deserved it.
And McQueen will get his nomination, and so will Fassbender. I think the jury's still out on Kerry Mulligan. She's got to, you know, pick the right project for.
She was nominated for Education, wasn't she?
She might have been, yeah. But I mean, I think they'll all end up getting their wins. I think McQueen will win this year for Best Director. I'm not sure, you know, if Fassbender will this year or if it'll come later. But I think that maybe more people would have seen the movie, and I would like that. But I guess that's the reason, you know, one of the reasons why we pick sometimes the movies that we pick. It's things that we both like a lot that have kind of flown under the radar that, for whatever reason, because they were NC-17, but they're worth a view. And I absolutely think that, you know, regardless of how squeamish you are about sex and nudity and things of that nature, I mean, I think that it's a very human story.
You hit on the head. It's not gratuitous. As much sex as there is and as much boobies and A as there is.
And P.
Yeah, I don't ever feel like it's just showing it for the sake of showing it.
I see where, you know, if you wanted to, you could make the argument that, well, did we really need to see Fassbender, you know, like, that nude that quickly.
Who would argue against that? It's like, hey, why would you give me $500 for free?
I'm not sure. But I mean, I think that you see him naked, you see him completely stripped down. I mean, maybe it's a metaphor for something, or maybe it's, you know, just to appease Dave.
So you went over box office numbers. Kerry Mulligan was nominated for an Oscar for an Education, and he co-wrote the script with Abby Morgan, which I got cut off, and I was looking it up. And
you didn't get cut off. You were looking it up, and I filled time.
Yeah.
Covered for you.
So you talked about box office numbers.
And got thrown in front of the subway.
I'm going to talk numbers of a different – I'm going to ask – I'm going to say numbers, and you're going to guess.
I thought we were going to do, like, over-under. How many
No,
times
some stuff? Of these you're going to be right because some of them are easy. Some of them you aren't. Number of women he hooked up with and out throughout the movie.
Well, do we know if he had sex with a redhead chick, or does that not count?
I didn't count her. and hooking up, fingering at a bar, I count as hooking up.
Oh, because I would not have counted that. 7.
If you don't count the fingering at a bar, it's 7. Yeah. I counted 8.
Okay.
Because I counted the threesome as 2, okay. Obviously. Yeah. Number of dudes hooked up with.
I'm going to go, if that means just getting a beeger, yes. I'm going to go with 1.
Number of times he ejaculated.
So I'm going to assume that with the hookers, it was only 1 time between the 2 of them. Mm-hmm. So there's 1 there, there's 1 there. I'm going to say 8.
It's 8.
Okay.
It's 8. It doesn't match the number of women. I mean, it is the same as the number of women he hooked up with, but they came from different ways.
Yes.
Times watching porn without coming.
1.
2.
Okay.
This is actually not even just watching porn, no coming. This is twice he was watching porn and not even J&O. Like, he wasn't even jerking off. Times jerking off with no cum.
I want to go just 1.
The one time his sister walked into him. He got interrupted, yes. Yeah. Times J&O with cum.
3?
Twice.
Twice.
Hookups with no cum.
Oh, my God. Are you counting the girl at the bar?
Counting the girl at the bar.
Okay. Let's go 2.
2. He came with 6. He came 6 different encounters with women and twice by his own accord. And then
by his own hand.
Yeah. Or no, only 5 of the women, because one of them was the dude. He
okay.
Came with, I counted the dude as a cum.
I'm getting confused.
So, confused?
No, I'm getting confused.
Ryan's confused.
No, he's not.
That's our shame episode. Before we head out, we always like to give a themed watch this bonus. So, Ryan, after listening to our discussion of the sex addict film Shame, tell people a David Duchovny movie to watch.
I will. It is a film that stars David Duchovny. It also stars Brad Pitt. And it also stars Juliette Lewis. It is California with a K, directed by Dominic Sena. I kind of like it a lot. David Duchovny movies, for me, I very few and far between.
I was actually shocked at how many of them I liked. Like TV Set, there's a bunch that I kind of forgot about. Even Playing God I liked. Like, there's a lot that, until I went and looked at it, it's like, oh, he's in a lot more movies than I liked.
He was not in more movies than I liked, but I don't necessarily like him in this one. I like Juliette Lewis a lot, and I think Brad Pitt is really kind of creepy in it as well. It's about these two journalists. They go off to tour like these serial killer sites and with a guide who may or may not be kind of crazy, a murderer, him or herself.
I have 2, because I always do. One of them is the movie we've talked about before. It's where Dave Duchovny has sex with his daughter. That is The Secret. It's a messed up movie, but it's hard to talk sex addict and not mention a movie where he screws his daughter. The one I do like, though, a lot, and I love this movie. I've talked about how much I love this movie, and it happened to just be on the other day, so I got to watch it recently, and I still love it. Dave Duchovny, Julianne Moore, Billy Crudup, Maggie Gyllenhaal. Trust the Man. This is a really competent romantic comedy, and it's a really good romantic comedy that's told more from the guy's side. You have, you know, Billy Crudup and Dave Duchovny are best friends. Duchovny happens to be married to Crudup's sister, so, and they're all having troubles. Crudup and Maggie Gyllenhaal split up. Dave Duchovny's cheating on Julianne Moore and decides to go to sex addiction classes, like meetings, so it's actually really good. It's really funny. I really like this movie. I love Billy Crudup and wish he were a bigger star. But Trust the Man is my Dave Duchovny movie, minus the one where he has sex with his daughter.
That's just kind of always an extra bonus, okay. Fun bonus.
Yeah. So if we missed – oh, tell us your thoughts on Shame. We didn't make a list. tell us what you thought about Shame. Hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. moviesonup.com. Find us on iTunes or Stitcher if you need different ways to listen to us. This week's, I don't know when this is going up, but we did our fantasy film ball draft this week. It's either coming later, probably. And then we also did our Star Trek episode. Listen to those. Please play fantasy film ball with us. The rules are in our draft, and we'll go over the rules in the next couple episodes. Next week will be fun. Favorite movies based on a TV show. And
there may be a David Duchovny movie that makes my list.
There is one that makes mine very high, probably. And our 100th episode, Extravaganza.
I feel like Extravaganza might be much, a little much.
Especially because we have no idea what we're doing for
right.
it. But that's next week. So if you want to find me, I'm at Dave Bacella on Twitter or DaveBacella.com. Ryan, anything to say before we head out?
No.
Until next time.
Keep it up.